You have to
ask
him.
Oh,
okay, maybe not that big.
Do you have them upstairs?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll come up.
We have these things every week. So, 2 feet that we want.
The one of the usual pair.
Just use it.
It's actually compiling as we speak.
So when it's closer to the front of that top of the tower.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to this week's NIST seminar. The presenter today is Adrian Zotto, who is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Information Security and Privacy Management Group. He is a holder of a PhD in Information Systems, Master's degree in European Economic Studies, and a Bachelor in Economic Informatics. And the topic that will be presenting for us today is Cyber Aims, which aims, as it was written in the abstract, to promote the usage of socio-technical systems approach to support the emerging role of systems thinking in cybersecurity education, using simulation as a supporting tool for learning. The session is streamed. At the end of it, we will have time for some questions and some gifts for the best questions coming from students. So, Arian, if you are ready, please.
Yes, just. I'm just connected to this one.
You had it up there, but okay, you connect to your own machine.
Sorry.
No, that's the one.
Try this.
I tried this one.
No, you don't. I think I should try this one.
Don't think so.
No, this is the main.
It has
computer.
To do what you're doing here. You have to push the button here.
Okay.
You go like that, and you just hit it. You got
it? That's right.
Yeah.
All
right. Ready? You got it? Take a deep breath.
I'm okay. So hi, sorry for this delay. So Thanks to Vasilis for the introduction. So my name is Arion. I'm recently an ERCIM postdoc fellow at the IIK department here in Jøvik. I'm going to introduce you my research work from the past 11 months here at this department. So, brief outline. I will be introducing myself and the work carried on through the past months in the first 10 minutes or so. Then I will be starting to describe how we designed this tool in the next 10 minutes. Then, of course, I will show some of the results we have and also some demos of the current versions of the Cyberains. And there is also a slot for the future research, because this is always an ongoing work. And this is also one of the reasons why I'm presenting my work here, so as to collect more feedback and to hopefully improve the tool further. And I will be looking forward to your questions and comments in the last 10 minutes of this slot we have today. So, the main goal of the presentation would be, first of all, to make you read the papers that we have prepared for the last months, and hopefully to try the tool, to try CyberAIMS. And if someone would say from the audience here, why should we try the tool? Well, at least because the Prime Minister has already tried it, so why not? So once again, I'm an ERCIM Fellowship awardee. I've started here since October 2017 as a research fellow, affiliated to the Information Security and Privacy Management Research Group, with Stuart Kowalski as my internal coordinator. I'm studying and researching in the field of information security economics, and the main output for this research until now is exactly the agent-based simulation tool, which is trying to combine theoretical approach with empirical data. Before that, I was a full-time lecturer until September 2017 at the Faculty of Economy, University of Tirana in Albania, where I had courses taught like management information systems, e-commerce, information security economics, which was one of the reasons why I'm here, and also informatics and other courses related basically to ICT or to computer science. I had a doctoral degree in information systems from 2015 in the same university, and it was about data quality in accounting information systems. I tried to use some of the classification data mining techniques to have some important conclusions for my PhD thesis. I also had a master in European Economic Studies as Vasilis said, and also a Bachelor in Economic Informatics from 2008. But the big question would be, can we use the old tools to understand the current situation in cyberspace? So can we use these tools to understand better what's happening today in cyberspace, or should we use a new digital toolbox? Well, I'm here today to argue that we should use a new digital toolbox, and maybe a part of this toolbox should be addressed from the tool. So what are some of the recent cyber world or cyberspace problems? You all have heard of WannaCry. It was a very severe a ransomware attack occurring last year, and I also had a guest lecture on this ransomware attack in Austria, in University of Graz. And also there was this other ransomware or something similar attack from called NotPetya. And further on, there are some other informations of APT33 attacks last October, and also going to this year, we had the Winter Olympics attacked from a possible cyber attack. So with all these recent cases, what should we do? Should we still use these old tools to address them and to solve the situation? Some recommendations from academia are concerned related to how can we improve curricula in related to cybersecurity. This is a report, the most recent report from the Joint Task Force on Cybersecurity Education, about several guidelines for post-secondary degree programs in cybersecurity. In the material, we can say that these words here can be maybe used as part of the toolbox, but are we still able to use them? Are we still capable also to use them? Some of the words defined there say that due to the adversarial nature of cybersecurity, the study of offensive or hacking techniques is often a good way to develop stronger defensive cyber skills. And also, there is a thought model there, which includes six cross-cutting concepts, where you can see confidentiality, integrity, availability, risk, but also adversarial thinking and systems thinking. So we are here today also to see how we can use this tool to get the users to teach or to learn more about adversarial and systems thinking. What's going on outside Norway? There is also this UK-style cyber defense model, which shows that there should be a systemic effort to be strong enough to face current issues and forthcoming issues. And also the US and agencies in the US are considering this UK style. So they are also in the process of considering systems thinking approach to defend against possible cyber attacks. So should we use simulation as a cognitive tool in this case? Further background. So we are now almost starting to describe what the tool includes. So there is this constant dilemma between having this naivist inductivism approach or having the sophisticated falsificationism approach. Sorry about that. So what the tool did and what we did in this is that we started from both sides. So we had that theoretical approach. So we want to start with the hypothesis, and our hypothesis would be that we would like to use a socio-technical systems approach to tackle this issue and to provide further solutions. On the other side, we have some empirical data ranging from a cyber war game developed recently, also a Ponemon report, which was submitted last year, and it studied the behavior of the attacker. So it had this attacker's perspective related to how they perform the attacks, what are their annual spendings on average, and so on. And also we had this other RAND report, Markets for Cybercrime Tools and Stolen Data, which provided some estimates that could be relevant for the tool. So we went from both sides and we tried to develop a simulation tool that would help us address what? and this is the research methodology that we followed. So we are using this design science approach, and this methodology would help us create an artifact and develop it further and further in an iterative process so that we can finally conclude with a final artifact and a final model that we can use for such problems. And what would be the aim? Would be to produce a proof-of-concept artifact that is able to show how a simulation tool can affect thinking processes of several students in cybersecurity, because this is what the current stage is, but we also have further ideas that we can show you in the next slides. The research question would be, can we design a simulation tool to improve adversarial and systems thinking ability on students in cybersecurity? And we will try to address this question by using this agent-based simulation tool, which is named CyberAIMS and is an acronym for the Cyber Agents Interactive Modeling and Simulation Tool. This is one snapshot of one of the current versions of the tool. In this snapshot, you may see that there are several elements there. So in the left side, you can see some sort of sliders which are used to initiate the whole process. So there are several values there which the user could choose to start from, and then if he clicks run or go in this setup, he can actually start the simulation and see what's next. And among these initial values, you can choose between the initial number of agents, both sides. So let's say we have two types of agents, which are attack agents on the left side of the central screen there, and also defense agents on the right side. There are also other sliders there showing how can you define the starting values for each attribute that we are going to show further. And also on the right side, you can see the plots. We will have some demos on this tool in the next minutes. Now, how did we achieve this interface? So how did we arrive till here? This interface was provided through NetLogo, which is a simulation platform. It's a programmable modeling environment for simulating natural and social phenomena. And in this case, we thought it would be useful also because it's considerably used in academia, and it can be highly intuitive for students or other similar groups of target users to use it and to create some thinking behind that. We use the social technical systems approach to think about what attributes, what features should have an agent in this simulated cyberspace. In the social technical systems approach, there are the social components and the technical components. So if we can argue that each of these components or subcomponents can bring about a different stage or can explain every problem, even those related to cybersecurity, then we can, of course, argue and find some attributes that could be brought upon from these components and further into the tool. So what we did was that from the social components, which are on the left, as in culture and structures, we think that appropriate attributes for an agent in this simulated cyberspace would be related to the skills value or to the skill level of these agents. So what are their skills related to cybersecurity? And also to the motivation level of these agents. So how are they, or how much are they motivated related to performing an attack or defending their own assets or the assets of their of the entity they're representing? The social component is also let's say affected somehow from the budget or from the infrastructure component somehow. So we also thought that in this case, as in also the right components of the social and cultural and technical systems, we should have one attribute related to the resources, which are the which define the budget for performing cybersecurity activities, both for the attackers and both for the defenders. So, using this approach, we came up with three attributes that we have further used in the tool, and which I mentioned, and that are resources, skills, and motivation. We have two sets of agents, as in defense and attack, that I mentioned, and each of them is further separated into four categories, or namely echelons. In echelons, we mean a similar group of agents which has like similar attributes, values, or other features. So for the defense, we have the individual agents echelon, which is like mapping individual people. So if we have any individual who wants to, let's say, protect or defend his assets from potential cyber attacks, what could he spend? How motivated would he be to do that? And what would be his skills to do that? And the same reasoning goes for the other echelons. We have the small and medium enterprise echelon. So let's say we have a small and medium company with some budget, with some levels of skills depending on the employees there, and also with a certain level of motivation. And then we have the corporates, the multinational corporates, the biggest enterprises, with lots and lots of money devoted to IT-related activities and, of course, somehow to cybersecurity activities, to defending those big assets they have. And to finalize the defense, we have the state agencies, which should have the highest resources related to this group, these four echelons, and then related to the skills and motivation that could be variable. On the attack side, we have the script kiddies, we have the hacktivists, the ideological hackers, we have the contractors or the cybercrime organizations providing services in the black market and so on, and we also have in here a national regarding state. But in here, now we have the state-sponsored agents. So those types of entities or individuals that are sponsored from a state or country in order to perform cyber attacks. We further distributed them in specific ratios according to the RAND report, 2014, and we used the estimate for defense, like in 90% of the whole amount in individuals, 3% small and medium, 3% corporates, and 4% states, against 70% of the total agents in the attack side, as in script kiddies, 2% ideological, 18 to 20% contractors, and 10% state agents. For the resources, we started to map values according to several sources. We started from the individual agents. And I even remember, maybe also some of the colleagues in my office remind that, I asked them, what would you be able to spend if you were to defend from cyber attacks? Or, for example, could an individual spend up to, let's say, $1 million or something like that? Actually, I tried to reason further on that, and because of the time constraint, I found a relevant source in the HSB Cyber Survey 2017. That's an insurance company trying to sell cyber insurance product to its customers. In this survey, they had some data, some aggregate data on the amount people would be willing to spend on cybersecurity to protect themselves from these attacks. On the small and medium enterprises and corporates, there are some data from the SANS report 2016, where they give estimates from small and medium enterprise and also corporates related to their IT budget and also how much from their IT budget is spent on cyber activities to defend themselves. On the attack side, we were mostly linked to the Ponemon report, so we used the data shown there in order to distribute values between the script kiddies, ideological hackers, and contractors. While for the state agents, presuming that a state agent could defend the entity he's representing and also maybe attack another entity, they should be defined in the same range of values, and for this we use the same source as in the CIPRI database, the CIPRI Military Expenditure Database. Latest data from 2017. For the skills, we use the Global Cybersecurity Index, which is an annual report submitted from International Telecommunications Union. We use the values from 2017. It has a range of 25 indicators trying to monitor and compare level of ITU member states' cybersecurity commitment as regarding to the five pillars, which are about technical capacities, legal, organizational, capacity building, and so there are five of them. For the motivation, in this stage, we are still following a heuristic approach. We are aware that there are a lot of theories underlying motivation in cyberspace, and we will use them in the next stages. All attributes have distinct values from 1 to 100, so we have the resources, skills, and motivation in this range of values, whereas for the skills, as related to the cybersecurity index, we have values from 1 to 93. So, this is a table where it's shown the distribution of values. You can see there how are the agents allocated between different levels of resources. While for the skills and motivation, we thought that any echelon would maybe be somehow everywhere in the ranges, therefore the skills and motivation. So the model that we designed runs through several ticks or steps, They usually represent a fixed period of time, as in days, weeks, etc. What we did was that we chose one step to be equivalent of 3 days, because this is the minimum time that, according to the Ponemo report, a hacker could successfully attack his target. The current version, we have a maximum number of ticks as 120, representing 1 year of cyber activity, which is like a short-term vision. If an attack would be extended to 2 ticks, it means that the target aimed has a strong infrastructure. If the agent would not be able to attack his target within 3 ticks, it means that he will not be motivated to continue attacking that target, and he will change his target. This is a flowchart showing what happens in a single step. In this version, we have a random agent from the attack side choose a random agent from the defense side. If the attack agent assumes that his opponent's level of resources is at number 3, so it's like the highest level of resources, he could, most of the time, he could attack the his opponent. But that would be only if the severity of the attack would be higher than 0.2. If not, this means that he cannot attack his opponent, and for the next step, he should try to increase his motivation. In this way, the attacker is able to understand initially a part, it doesn't have full information on the opponent. He only has information on the opponent's infrastructure, as in weak, average, or strong. And also he cannot know until he's attacking the level of skills. But what he can do, he can only increase his motivation in order to increase his chances to attack. There are some formulas here. The values of the severity are, if it's lower than 0.2, it means it won't be attacked. If it's 0.21 or so, it means the target will be attacked in the next 3 steps. If it's 0.5 in 2 steps and 1 in the same step. And so, how are the values updated? The attacker motivation is the only attribute increased if there is no attack, because the attacker is willing to continue trying to attack the target. Else, if the attack is performed, all the values are updated except for the defense. All the values are updated, as you see, so you have the attacker resources and the defender resources change at the same value. The attacker skills and defender skills change both because of a learning process. The attacker motivation and defense motivation change in different directions by the same value. So now is the time to run a demo of the simulation. So what we have here, we have, again, as shown there, we have the attack side agents and the defense side agents. We will try a scenario where there are 50 agents from the attack side and 100 agents from the defense side. This is an ongoing work, and you can see from the values down here that there should be something like 90 agents, individuals on the right, and the others spread as there is shown there. So if with this, if I try to minimize all the values here, trying to show what would happen if all the agents from each side had similar values of resources, skills and motivation, we can maybe draw some conclusions. So let's click go. The ones changing the color show that they are being compromised from the attack. So they start losing resources and so on. But what happens is that even if they lose resources, the current version at this stage shows that they do not lose all their resources. So they are still there by the end of the year, but they do not lose their resources, all their resources, at least any of the agents, because also as you see here, the value of the number of defenders has not changed, so it's still 100. Now what if we change something from the individual defender side?
If the Prime Minister gives us more money. Try to show that that would be better. The more money she gives us, the better it is.
So, in this case, we change the values, as in we have different individuals from the defense side with different resource values. And what would happen if we change further the skills and motivation from the defense side? And here I just changed the speed of the process, and so as a continuing process, and I should provide you here with all the possible combinations, but what we have as result for this is that right now all runs, or mostly all runs, because it's a simulation, so once it can end up in once it can end up in 120 or on one another, why not? So what we have some results are that if we ask the question, what are the chances to survive of at least one agent from all or even specific defense echelons, we would say that there is a 60% of survival chance for each agent. So in the end of the simulation, 60% of all agents are still there, while the other 40 remaining are not there all the time. And from these 40, most of them are included in the individual echelon. So from this current version, the individual echelon is the most affected one. And then you have the small and medium enterprises, while for the corporates and the state agents, we cannot say that they are, at least one of them is fully attacked from a certain attack agent. Well, if we have a higher variation of defense resources, this would surely decrease their success rate. And on the other side, if we have a higher variation of skills and motivation, this would increase their success rate. So from this we can somewhat argue that the resources can sometimes have good impact, but sometimes not. And also the skills and motivation, it's better to have them variable, and also if this is the reality case, that could be a good way to start and think about a systems approach, not only related to the resources, but also to other attributes. I have here also some other results from the papers that we produced so far. We have had two different experiments with two target groups of students. Both of them were positive, so both of them had positive results related to their thinking process from before to after using the simulation tool. And we are looking further to extend our target users and have further functions in our simulation tool. As shown in the beginning, this is the demo that we showed to the Prime Minister. And actually she spoke in Norwegian, but I think that her comments were positive.
We find out on the 15th, that's when we get the budget. If we're going to get 15 million in the budget, then it worked. Didn't say no, but it.
And if I may, just a sec.
You have the publication.
Yeah. If I click run, this is what happens. In very few seconds, but...
In this section, we're attacking the node net. How long would it take for someone to bring down the node net in all that?
So you have base stations and terminals on the right side, and if I click run again in a shorter... in a slower step, this is what happens.
So how many days she has before she has to call them Americans?
So whenever the targets are becoming red, they are being compromised, and then slowly they are decreasing their resources and losing everything. Now it's 100 days.
Formal strategy is 30 days.
And with all this work that was done, we have three accepted papers and one working paper, and we're looking forward to increase this number. Thanks for attention. I hope it was a good way to spend this.
Thank you, everyone. You have some questions? Start with a student.
Yeah, I have a question, because like you talk about the old tools and the new tools, and as we know that a lot of old tools has the problem that they are too statical in a world especially that are dynamical, like the CyberNet, and how are you going with that tool to make sure that it will stay dynamical and updated to newer attacks that we don't know even exist now, but will in 5 years?
Well, a secondary aim for the tool would be to include it into the Norwegian CyberRange toolbox. So one answer would be, once it's included in the CyberRange toolbox, it can benefit from different types of data that we might collect from the partners that will be part of that CyberRange, but also from every kind of activity that might be mapped into the tool. So right now we have developed a simple scenario in order to have the students learn more about adversarial and system thinking in only 2 hours or so. But this aim can and should be the one that would allow this tool to have more and more data and to even perform simulations out of real-time data as much as possible. And So this is one answer. And we also have,
It was interesting, 2 days before the, 3 days before the Prime Minister's visit, I was attacked, I had a boot sector attack on my machine. We still don't know why. We still don't figure what it is. So we have a boot NXT file that no one understands. So the other way we can do it is be honeypots. We could just sort of have weak people here and have them learn from the weak people. So that's another way. So we use the data we get from our...
So even one of the next stages would be to have these agents learn by themselves so that they, for example, are assigned several strategies in the initial step, and then step by step they are learning what would be the best strategy for them, especially in the defense side. So if they have like 4 or 5 strategies as in the NIST directive or so, they should choose at one of them or a combination of them which would be the best for them to, let's say, secure a consistent, you know, performance against these cyber attacks. So it's still not there, but it will be in the next stages for sure.
More questions?
I saw your simulation, but from 2010, what we're seeing is that most of the time there is not the attacker, there are the defenders that are acting rogue. So if you analyze Panama Leaks, and Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, and like the last year, Vault 7, the CIA contractor was involved in leaking the confidential data. These data, these data breaches are conducted by like insiders. And your simulations doesn't represent like the rogue agents that are involved within the defenders. So what is your saying about that?
Yes, so another thing maybe to clarify. The simulation tool right now, as you saw also from the demo we had with the Prime Minister, shows what should be the time available for the defenders to react. So right now, and also following the previous answer, we still haven't found the right approach to assign several strategies to each defense agent. So they are not somehow active right now. What they have is they have some initial values for the resources, for the skills, based on, let's say, where they are from, or some random distributions, and also motivation. So we don't yet have a strong focus on these specific scenarios that you mentioned, because this is supposed to be part of the next stage there, when the different defense agents can have different thinking approach and can think like to attack their system, their own system, or to help attack their own system, or to be willing to defend their own system, and how are they going to defend. So this is an ongoing work.
Thank you very much for an interesting talk, and I guess I'm building a little bit on the last question. It relates to validity and the objective of the whole exercise. So if you show the slide where you was about teaching students something,
yeah.
You put that back up. The objective of the whole exercise. What are the first few slides? So, yeah, what you do?
Yeah, I'm just... Just a check. I know.
To produce a proof of concept that's able to show a group of students in cybersecurity. Okay, so the big question is, this really is a tool and approach for decision support. Teaching students, you're only halfway there. You need to make sure you teach the student the right thing, because the worst thing you can do is to teach students something such that they think they know something, whereas they don't. Okay? Teaching them, giving them a wrong sense of
inside. Okay, now that's the worst you can possibly do. Okay, now this is connected strongly to the concept of validity. Okay, you need to make sure that your approach to modeling is providing an accurate picture of what is going on, such that the findings that you make are useful when you go out and are going to make the decisions. Okay, fundamental issue. And the last question is relating to insiders. Okay, roughly 50% of the incidents are kind of related to insiders. Okay, so you need another echelon for the attackers, which would be the insiders. That's kind of the easy way out. Then there are fundamental issues in relation to all your parameters. I mean, they like 0.21. What does that mean? Okay, could mean anything. And typically, when an attack is going on, then you do some intelligence gathering. You work out what sort of systems the organisation is running, which you kind of get a list of that, and then you know what sort of vulnerabilities are potentially there due to lack of patching. Okay. Now, very specific ways of doing an attack, which are kind of not captured here, so it questions the whole approach with respect to its validity. So how do you address the concept of validity and, in effect, the utility of the whole approach?
Okay, so I'm jumping in the final slides. Because I was very short on the next stages. So for the future steps, first of all, I'm aware and we are aware that this is not the final step. So this is just the beginning. And this is a whole work in progress. So first of all, as I mentioned here, the first thing to do is to tackle motivation. So how do we define how people on the attack side are motivated and how people on defense side are motivated? There are some sources for that right now, and we are maybe going to use them, or we are going to perform deeper research into that. Another thing is that could also be related to the insider problem. This is also another future step. So there is an individual agent. He's part of a national echelon. He could be part of a defense or attack echelon. Now, is his performance affecting the group as a whole, or is the group's performance affecting him as an individual? In both cases, we are going to address this in the next stages. And as the insider problem, we could maybe have some agents there that could have a higher or lower probability of acting against their, expected behavior, and other agents that are acting as they are expected to behave. So in this case, it could also relate to the group dynamics part that is a strong future step that we think we should.
And Eric, can I talk about something quickly? So what happens in terms of validity, we would be using empirical research on validity. As you all know, in a month from now, we're going off to have a fight. The Norwegian security cyber, it's called the European Cyber Challenge. We're facing how many teams in London?
16.
16 different teams from around the world. The idea in the future would be using these competitions as ways of testing the tool. Some individuals will be getting the tool, other individuals won't. And we want to see over the long term whether the people that use our tool rank higher. Last year we were fourth, and hopefully this year we're going to be first and we can beat the Spanish people or
everybody.
So we're going to use that. So we're going to be using experiments to see, okay, if we train this class here on our tool, and then you guys go out and capture five competition, and the other team didn't get it, and you guys win, if this keeps on occurring, there might be a correlation and a pattern of causation there.
So you kind of plan to cheat.
No, it's called winning.
winning
at any cost.
No, that's okay. Any time we have it in war and love.
Yes. Okay, getting back to the agents and echelons, if you would. So my understanding is this gives you a de facto classification that's based on the various levels of resources, skills, and motivation for each different echelon. Have you considered breaking down the corporate echelon even further into things like multinational, like KMPGH, which is a multinational accounting firm, and they're going to have a certain level of resources, versus, let's say, Telenor, which is de facto infrastructure. And I think they're going to be significantly different than, let's say, KMPGH, with respect to their skills, their motivation, and their resources. And along the same lines, you might have sort of like de facto infrastructure, like Amazon or Google.
Hmm.
And wouldn't it be useful for the fidelity and the realism to break down the defensive echelons a little bit further to reflect those differences?
Yes, of course. So I think that could be incorporated into a specific scenario. So the problem always with information security is that you don't have the right data that you need. So even in this case, for the corporates that you mentioned, we have a range of values here on the table that shows that they are between 40 and 70 units out of 100, which should be something like in the range from $100,000 US dollars to almost $1 billion.
Right, but the bottom line, this is still in the cyber range, and if Telenor, which is one of our sponsors, gives us money that we will put as many different levels as the money allows and the time allows. But that's the whole issue. This is just a tool that will be adjusted according to the task at hand and the money at hand. Yes, so good to a point. Bring 15 million and we can have 15 million different tools.
Okay.
I think I do something else.
Aaron, thank you for your presentation. I also have.
Can you please go back to the? Can you please go back to the slides in which you explained how long the application runs, about the ticks, and so let's see. I think you said that after 3 ticks, if the attacker is not, it hasn't been able to compromise a target, then he will move to another target, right? That's.
Yeah.
That does apply for every single threat actor, or is it just for some of them?
This is the mapping of the Ponemon report data that we have from the sources. So from that report, we had that on average, all the attackers part of the survey there were like having this behavior. So on average, they spend 3 days to perform an attack on the easiest target with the average or lower infrastructure level of it. Then they spend 6 days, rounded up, of course, because it's like in hours, attacking until the last, let's say, set, the strong architecture. And on average, they spend, if they spend like 9 days or more, they would leave this process and start targeting another one.
Okay.
So these are data that we found from the Ponemon report that we mapped into the tool, and now we are trying to see if they can, let's say, map into real world problems or not.
Okay, the question was, it's very interesting, by the way. Well, the question was because I assume that, let's say, a nation-sponsored actor will be fixated into a particular target for more than 3 days. So what I
Yeah, but we don't have much more data for that. So.
Thank you, Aaron. I have one question for you as well.